welcome to Crime Kooks with your hosts Emily and
Rachel. Today we will enlighten you on the tale of Pablo Escobar, an infamous drug dealer and mafia boss who was a little bit over the top, I guess, but you know.
A little? You know, just a little.
Just a little. Just, I mean, for like a mafia man.
Didn't he like have like 90% of the cocaine trade at one point?
Yeah, he was kind of like overpowered.
Just a little bit.
Just a wee bit. Anyways, so he was born December 1st, 1949, and he was in the Department of Columbia. He was the third of seven children to a farmer and an elementary school teacher. So, you know, he didn't exactly become something you were going to expect, you know, whenever he grew up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a picture-perfect life, you know? I mean, other than, like, seven kids, that doesn't really sound nice to me, but...
Right, I wouldn't call it picture-perfect. I mean, obviously you're going to have some issues, but, like, also it wasn't a bad environment of, like, extremely alcoholic parents, you know, gets beat, major family issues, like, Gacy. Ooh, he has issues.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see, like, how different some of these people's childhoods are. Because, like, it shows you, like, anyone can kind of become someone like this.
Exactly. But anyways, so, he was raised in Medellin, and it's believed that as a teenager, he would steal gravestones and sand them down, then resell them for reuse. And his brother, Roberto, denies this belief. But he also claims that the gravestones came from cemetery owners whose clients stopped paying for the care of the graves and that they had family in the gravestone business.
Whoa, hold on. Okay, so basically this gravestone guy, he's like, okay, so you're not paying for this grave anymore. We're just gonna, you know, take it out of the ground and resand it. Loser. I guess you won't be able to find where your loved one's buried.
No, but, like, you have to really think about that. Because imagine owning a cemetery and then, like, you lose, like, say, for instance, all the records get burned down and you go to, like, you know, plant someone in a different plot and that plot already just has a body just laying there and they're like, huh.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. Because, you know, normally you'll be able to tell because, you know, there's a headstone or something. But, like, since they sanded it down and got rid of it and sold it to someone else, there's no way of telling.
No, but what I want to know is, why does it cost money? Like, does this guy, like, have a yearly fee to have your loved one have a gravestone? Like, you know, he's like, okay, so it's, like, $15 a year, but we got to account for interest rates, so it's, like, $18.
Well, yeah, but also, like, so some people will pay to have it cleaned. Like... Have you ever been on TikTok and watched those people just go out and clean the gravestones? Because that is the most satisfying thing I've ever watched.
Why is there a TikTok for that? That is horrible.
There's all sorts of them.
I don't like you.
Anyways, they're really nice and they find out the backstory, just like what we're doing with Pablo Escobar. So let's continue. Do not hate on me for that.
I'm sorry.
His son, Sebastian... claims his rise to crime all began when he started a successful sale of counterfeit high school diplomas. I mean,
what? Counterfeit diplomas. So he's just selling
specifically
this?
For high school. Not even like
college?
Yeah, not even college.
That's specifically That's weird.
Yeah.
That's a weird place to start out for your crimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyways. So Escobar studied at university for a short time, but left without getting a degree, which is why I'm sure he would find his own way to, you know, make a diploma for that. Could do it with high school, I mean. But anyways, Escobar eventually became involved in many minor criminal activities with Oscar Bunnell, Aguirre, and with the duo running petty street scams, selling contraband cigarettes, fake lottery tickets, and stealing cars.
The whole shebang.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Just a little bit of everything, you know. Cigarettes, stealing, you know, a person's car. Yeah, it's fun.
Scams.
Oh, yeah, those too.
fake lottery tickets?
All of them.
Which you have to wonder. I wonder if where he's from, you know, because he's from a different country than we are. If so, like in the United States, it's illegal for like people our age to touch lottery tickets. But I wonder if it's different for people where he is.
I don't think Pablo Escobar cared about legality for any of these things.
I mean, to an extent, because like, if a child is caught with a lottery ticket, they're going to be like, where did you get that? Because they have to go through the whole process and they aren't legally allowed to give a child one. So like that person can get in trouble. And Pablo, you know, the less the cops are on your back, the better. You feel me?
You're like really on it with this lottery ticket thing. I mean, the guy murdered people. I don't really think he cared about what the cops thought.
Yeah, but also, he's a mafia boss, and you want less people. The less people on your back, the better. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Come on now.
Okay, Jesus, just get continue. With it.
Anyways, so, in the early 1970s, prior to entering the drug trade, Escobar acted as a thief and bodyguard, allegedly earning roughly $100,000. By kidnapping and holding a Medellin executive for ransom. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, I would have expected more, but...
I mean, you couldn't buy any of the houses I found on Zillow for that much, but...
Please don't bring Anyways. Zillow into this.
Escobar began working for Alvaro Prieto, a contraband smuggler, who operated around Medellin, aiming to fulfill a childhood ambition to have Colombian pesos worth $1 million by the time he was 22.
Ambitious man.
I know, that's a lot of money for a single peso. He's known to have a bank deposit of 100 million Colombian pesos, so more than $3 million, when he turned 26. Because he was so rich, the luxury house he created contained a zoo, a lake, a sculpture garden, a private bull ring, and other diversions for his family and the cartel. So, you wanted to be his friend.
Yeah, I mean, the house, look at all this stuff, like a bull ring, like, that's not even necessary.
Right.
Like, I've seen mansions... None of them have that. Like, this guy, he's eccentric. I like it.
I've seen a mansion with no railings.
No railings on what?
On like, anything. So, like, the stairs, around the stairs.
Oh.
It's got three floors, and there's, you know, the decks. There's no railings on the decks on every single floor.
Sometimes the relationships you make between things is so wild.
I'm sorry. I get, my brain says this, but it says it really, really fast. And so you get the first this to the last this.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally.
Mm-hmm. Anywho. Get it? I didn't.
Oh, my God.
So he's a drug lord. And a narco-terrorist, which is a narcotics trafficker who does so in attempts to influence government or social policies through violence and intimidation and to remove anti-drug laws using such threats. In 1975, he started his cocaine plans, flying out planes mainly between Colombia and Panama and smuggling routes into the U.S. He eventually bought 15 larger planes, including a Learjet and 6 helicopters.
So, does he own his own, like, personal hangar now with all these planes? Because that's a lot. Like, holy crap. Wish I could own a plane.
1976, Pablo and his men were arrested when found in possession of 39 pounds of white paste. He initially tried to bribe the judges.
39 pounds. 39 freaking pounds.
Yes.
Holy crap.
So anyways, he tried to bribe the judges, which failed, obviously. And after months of legal wrangling led to him ordering the murder of two arresting officers. So, you know, that fun stuff. Murder. The case was later on dropped.
So those were like first murders. It kind of like built up to this. So like it was like stealing, like petty theft, then drug deals, and then murder.
Listen, I want to say the answer is yes. But also, mafia men know how to cover their tracks. I mean, he's not going to confess to every murder, and there's not going to be stuff out there for everything.
Okay, fair. But this is like the first recorded murder that we know of.
That I know of, yeah. Well, and that was just orders for murder. I'm not even sure if it actually went through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, so he typically dealt with accusations through murder and bribery, you know, as mafia people do. And cocaine needs increased in the United States. So he made shipments, routes, and distribution locations in Southern Florida, California, and Puerto Rico. Because, you know, those are hot spots.
Yeah, I mean, just getting everywhere. That's how you bring it, you know, you get your bang for your buck.
I mean, yeah. Anyways, so he was believed to the support of the 19th. What? Oh, he was believed to support the 19th of April movement, which was in 1985 and involved the storming of the Colombian Supreme Court by left-wing guerrillas, which resulted in the deaths of a half of the judges in the court. At the height of its power, the Medellin cartel made more than $70 million a day, smuggling 15 pounds of cocaine every day into the U.S., which evidently, it clearly got around and was used, so.
Yeah. Woo! That's a lot of money. Holy
right?
crap.
That's a bunch of money. So, about 10% of the cash had to be thrown out due to spoilage, as in the rats nibbled on some of the bills, rendering them useless. So, imagine being so picky about your bills that you decide, hey, some rats just kind of nibbled on the corners, so we're not going to use this.
No, see, I think the rats, like, actually devoured the money. That's why it was, like, useless. There's only, like, a few pieces left. Like,
listen, it only says nibbled, so.
Rats, listen, there's, like, a lot of money there, and rats, yeah, rats are wild. I don't know. They're weird creatures.
Yes, they are wild. Good job, Emily.
They definitely ate a lot of the money. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of that money probably went to waste because of those rats.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 1989, Forbes magazine estimated Pablo to be one of 227 billionaires in the world with a net worth of $3 billion, and his Medellin cartel controlled 80% of the global cocaine market.
One of 227, not that impressive.
Right. Anyways, he was seen as a hero to the poor despite being infamous to the local and state governments. He was a natural at PR. He supported children's football teams, funded construction of houses and football fields in Western Colombia, and he became a Robin Hood of sorts, constantly funding the underprivileged. So, I mean, he might have killed a few people, but at least he was nice.
I don't think that's what you should take away from that. I think that's what protected him all those years. He was seen as a public hero.
Yeah, that's exactly why billionaires do that.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you can kill all the people you want, smuggle all the drugs you want into the country, but if you're, so long as you have a good public standing, you're fine.
Yeah, no, people would definitely riot if billionaires didn't do something good with their money.
Yeah, take notes, people.
Mm-hmm. Anywho, so, some of these Medellin people helped Escobar avoid police detection. See, there's where that came in. And capture by serving as lookouts, hiding information from the authorities, and protecting Escobar. So, drug traffickers from Medellin and other areas handled over 20 to 35% of Colombian cocaine-related profits to Escobar, as he was the one who shipped the cocaine to the U.S. successfully. So, because of the struggle for supremacy against other cartels, Colombia quickly became the world's murder capital with 25,100 violent deaths in 1991 and 27,100 in 1992. This was fueled by Escobar's compensation of hitmen to kill police officers, over 600 of whom died as a result.
Wow. So, pretty successful murderer right there.
Yeah, this guy really didn't care about his men, evidently.
No, I mean, that's a lot of people. Holy crap. 2,000 people from, like, 1 year to the next.
Right? Every man for himself. That's what I'm saying.
More like it's Pablo against everyone else. He's having them all line up and just shooting a gun at them, basically.
No. See, he's having them all line up and then having someone else shoot them all.
Okay, it's basically the same thing.
Basically the same thing, but it's also different. So you were wrong. Take that. Anyways. So, eventually, Pablo's reign of terror turned public opinion against him and caused the breakup of the Alliance of Drug Traffickers. So, you know, that's not going to go well for him. Or anyone.
I need some time, okay? We can't do this anymore. See, you lied to me and we can't be together anymore.
I was thinking more, we were on a break!
Nah, because then they got back together.
Yeah. And I mean, they're still drugs.
Yeah.
So, after the assassination of the Luis Carlos Gallen, a Colombian literal journalist who ran for the president twice and declared himself the enemy of the drug cartels, go figure, the administration of Cesar Gaviria moved against Escobar and the drug cartels. So, you know, you lost one force that was going for you.
Yep.
Since he surrendered himself, the threat of extradition was lifted, and Pablo was allowed to build his own luxury prison, which was guarded by men of his own choosing.
Okay, so let me get this right. This rich dude, he kills all these people, but because he's rich, he gets his own frickin' prison, which is basically a mansion. So, really, he's only under house arrest.
Eat the rich.
Yeah.
Also, not to mention, they literally said he can choose whoever guards it. So, like, how are you supposed to know that they aren't just letting him out?
They probably are, because isn't he kind of, like, the one paying them since he owns the prison? Like, what?
Honestly. Oh, my God. So, he even had a spa, a casino, and a nightclub in his prison, quote, unquote. In June 1992, however, he escaped authorities. Go figure! Go figure!
If you keep it and I will beat you up.
When he tried to move him to a more standard holding facility.
All right, so, yeah. What?
The man must have run out of money. I bet the casino failed him.
Yeah, probably.
Anyways, so a 16-month manhunt for the drug lord took place soon after. 16 months. I mean, that's longer than other people took. So during that time, the monopoly of the Medellin cartel, which had begun to crumble during Escobar's imprisonment, as the police raided offices and killed the leaders, deteriorated. So basically Escobar's entire, you know, fun
criminal empire?
Yeah, criminal empire just fell to the ground.
Yeah, that kind of happens when the leader's gone AWOL, or really been in prison, but, like, he did go AWOL for 16 months.
Yeah. MIA. You know, missing in action.
Yeah, I got that.
Good, I'm glad you got that. Anywho. So, Escobar's family was successfully able to seek asylum in Germany, and found refuge in a Bogota hotel. However, on December 2nd, 1993, the Colombian law enforcement finally caught up with Pablo. Again.
Finally, like, what? This police work, some of this police work in some of these cases is just, like, so sad.
Honestly, especially because they let a firefight ensue in the middle of a middle-class neighborhood in Medellin. Why would you open fire in a neighborhood? That's awful.
Well, this was when they were, like, trying to, like, get Pablo.
They were, but also,
that's, yeah, like, yeah, I know. Not the best way to get him.
Listen, back in the day, a lot of kids played outside. Imagine just chilling in your front yard with your friends and then, you know,
a few strange stuff men starts
going
with,
down.
A few strange men with some SMGs come out.
Yeah, not a good afternoon. Not a good afternoon. So, both Pablo tried to escape across a series of rooftops, and both he and his bodyguards were shot and killed.
So imagine this. You're literally playing in your neighborhood, you know, like, I don't know, whatever kids did back then, probably some stupid crap. Anyways, they're doing that stupid crap. And they just see this guy jumping roofs and, like, running. And there's gunfire everywhere. That would be so cool.
I mean, you see it in the movies all the time.
Exactly. Like, imagine telling your kids that story. Just be like, yeah, I saw this guy jumping on a roof. And there's, like, bullets everywhere. It's crazy.
It was crazy. And they'd be like, okay, Grandpa. Go take your medicine.
Go take your medicine.
Anyway. That one was funny.
Stop laughing at your own joke so much. Be humble.
Sit down.
Stop. Stop.
Okay. So, so after his death, the Medellin cartel's demise accelerated, and Colombia's central role in cocaine trade fell with it. His family was also placed under police protection. So, you know, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, any of Pablo's enemies probably want to go after his family.
I mean, it's not like they can get anything out of them. He's dead.
Yeah, but they still want revenge. Okay, listen, drug dealers don't have the best common sense. They just look out for revenge. So, yeah.
Yeah. Revenge is how you get fun stories like these, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, many Colombians mourned his death as more than 25,000 Colombians came to his burial. He built houses and cared about the poor. In the future, people will go to his tomb to pray the way they would to a saint. One of the many people from the funeral stated, as reported in the story by the New York Times. So he was still very popular, even though, like, a whole part of his downfall was the fact that he had lost his public image.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people might have been in denial about the whole situation, mm-hmm. you know, the whole sitch, mm-hmm. And, you know, he still did a lot of good things, so a lot of those people are willing to overlook some of it, because they're like, oh, I mean, he doesn't murder women and children, he's just murdering other men who are, like, you know, he's competing against or whatever.
Right. Which, okay, I'm not gonna lie, I thought for, like, the longest time, Mafia where it was, like, a fictional thing and that it wasn't real. And then I was like, Pablo Escobar is a cool dude. And so he was, like, actually, like, real and, like, actually had, like, a cartel. And I was like, huh. So this is, like, a thing. And then I was like, well, it's probably just a thing from back in the day. And then I had a conversation with someone and they were like, Rachel, Mafia is still around. They just hide way better.
True. I mean, after, like, fallout like this with Pablo Escobar, I think they'd want to try and be a little smarter about what they do.
Here's the real question. Did it actually fall out, or did they fake a fallout?
I hate you.
You're welcome. Anyways, so many TV shows were inspired by his crime-filled life, such as Narcos and El Patron del Mal. But, you know, so apparently he was famous for, you know, murdering people.
I think it was more of his drug cartel. But yeah, he did murder about like 2,000 people, or at least, you know, sanction the murders of them.
I'm sure half of his life is what surrounds like at least every single action movie ever. You know?
I don't know.
Not every action movie.
I was going to say Fast and Furious 8 didn't really seem like something that's based on a drug cartel.
I was thinking a bit more like Marvel.
Yes. What?
Yeah, like Black Panther doesn't have any like drug cartels in it. Oh my God, wait, does it?
So then why would it be based off of it? Do you even know what you're saying right now?
I'm disagreeing with myself.
Okay, wow. That was, wow. All right.
Anyways. Yeah, and it's not in Captain America either. Wait. Anyways, tune in next time to hear about Jack the Ripper. And again, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Emily.
Don't be stupid and stay safe.